The list of recommendations to change DOD's benefit system from the Military Compensation and Retirement Modernization Commission have been getting their first hearings on Capitol Hill over the last few weeks. That list details a new health care system and a hybrid retirement plan for the 4 out of 5 troops who don't serve at least for 20 years. The panel's ideas have not yet sparked an open revolt in Congress so far, but some outside groups are warning that some of the changes might do more harm than good. Retired Vice Admiral Norb Ryan, U.S. Navy retired, is president of the Military Officers Association of America. Mo has been doing its own analysis of the recommendations and sees some way that they could hurt retention. Admiral, thanks for coming back on Federal News Radio. Appreciate hearing from you.
My pleasure, Jared.
And there's a lot of meat to this report, and it touches a lot of aspects of the compensation system. But the biggies in terms of costs and probably in terms of controversy are retirement and health care, as we mentioned. And let's start with retirement. I'll just give a quick description of what the commission recommended for our listeners. Military members would basically keep getting the defined benefit pension that people get today after 20 years. But instead of giving 50% of your high three salary, you'd get 40%. And then those savings get plowed back into basically a government match in the thrift savings plan like civilian employees get now. In a recent op-ed, you wrote that you're worried that a plan like that could harm long-term retention. You want to lay out that argument for us?
Well, Jared, I think it's good that we're trying to do something for the 83% that leave without a match from the government. You know, they are eligible right now for contributing to a thrift savings plan, but they don't get any match from the government. Of course, they get a wonderful GI Bill, which is worth over $80,000. So it's not as if our young men and women leaving don't get some good stuff from the government, including a tremendous start in their life with leadership. But we're not opposing the 401k match for those young people, but we're really worried that there's more of an incentive in this program for people to leave than to stay. And by that, I mean we focus on that 10-year NCO, that non-commissioned officer, that 10-year 03 or 04 officer, known nothing but combat in the last 10 years, sitting around the table with their family saying, gee, is it worth staying in? We love our country, but the pers tempo, op tempo, we're going to still be going on a lot of deployments, and looks like our retirement's going to be cut. Now, this is all perspective on the retirement. It's not going to happen to people in now, but in another, you know, period of time when you're in the same situation. We think it's going to be more of a draw for people to leave than to stay in. And it's that mid-grade officer and petty officer that we need to keep in. So we have some concerns, but this is a top-notch group that made these recommendations. They've got 280 pages to dwell on, but we think we ought to be very, very careful about this and not lose sight of the forest from the trees. It's nice to help these individuals, but this system is designed to get people to stay in a very demanding career, not for 10 years, but for 20, and for some of them from 20 to 30.
One of the really useful things I think the commission did is some really in-depth surveys of the current population to ask them basically what benefits they value and what they would like to see. One of those findings was the alternative retirement plan that we've been talking about. 53% of them prefer that. 45% of them prefer basically what we have right now. If there is a concern about retention and what service members would find attractive, those survey results would seem to undercut that argument, wouldn't it?
Not really. You know, a lot of people come in the individual services knowing they're only going to serve 4 or 5 years. And so obviously they would be people that are inclined to go ahead and agree with, look, I'd rather have something with me when I leave.
Mm-hmm.
What we would like to see is a more in-depth analysis of those that have been in for a considerable period of time. You know, you ask somebody if they want something now, they're always going to be in favor of that. But what we need to remember that this system was designed for that 17% of the force, of which 73% of is enlisted, that we need to stay in for a career. So that's the key for us, is getting those folks to stay in past 1 or 2 tours for 20 years or 30 years and be in charge, that command sergeant major or that 06 in charge of a ship or a division.
One of the things the commission does to kind of get at that retention issue is at the 12-year point, offer the military services the ability to offer retention bonuses. And I think the service chiefs would actually have the ability to scale those up and down based on what they think their retention and recruiting needs are at any given time. Does that help at least?
It helps if the people would actually use that and invest that. But so many of our folks at that age and seniority are still, living paycheck to paycheck or close to that. And we're afraid too many of them will use it for something here and now to get out of debt or perhaps to help them with a home or a car payment. We've done this in the past with the Redux retirement system in the 80s, and it turned out to be not a good deal because that little bit of bonus doesn't make up for the huge amount of compensation that you would get under the old system, for longevity.
Yeah, I think Redux is still an option, but nobody takes it.
Thank goodness. It's a form of payday lending. To take that $30,000 bonus and have it taxed, and then to walk away from hundreds of thousands of what would have been a retirement benefit.
I want to get into the numbers here a little bit, because to me there's a bit of a discrepancy in your numbers versus the commission's numbers. In the op-ed that I mentioned, you say that an E7 retiring at 20 years would stand to lose $260,000 in pay over his or her lifetime. The commission says that they would actually get a better deal after 20 years when you add up the capital gains from the thrift savings plan plus the remaining defined benefit that they would get. They would get $248,000 versus $217,000. So what explains that discrepancy?
Yeah, it all starts with the discount rate that they use to say that money in the future, they use a discount rate, Jared, of I think around 12%. Whereas with the ulcers, they use something that's like, 1/4 of that. So they're greatly undervaluing that retirement system for that E7. An E7 can go in and look it up, or somebody that thinks they're going to retire as an E7 and can look it up, that they would get $24,000 a year, just under that, if they retired this year in pay before taxes and taking out allotments for their survivors and stuff. And if you project that out in the DOD tables, it shows it's worth over $1 million. So we have a professional disagreement on that discount rate of how they discount what it would be valued for somebody trying to make a decision whether to stay in or get out. We think that's grossly underestimating the value of that particular retirement. So it's a professional thing. It's not like they don't have the right to their opinion, but I think we have some serious doubts about that being an accurate portrayal.
I do want to get to TRICARE before we let you go, but one last point on compensation. And let's address the fairness issue really quickly, because one of the commission's objectives here was to try and get something to the folks who don't make it to 20, who, and as you point out, right now, because of budget cuts, we're involuntarily separating captains and majors who have served in Afghanistan. Some of them are getting their discharge notices while they're in Afghanistan. Those people are going to get nothing.
No, that's not true. If they're involuntarily separated...
Well, they're not going to get a pension.
They don't get a pension, but they get a percentage of the number of months that they have served. They get a particular part of that salary, so they do get something if they're involuntarily separated. But again, I think it's just a quibble. We understand that they want to do something for these folks that leave, but this nation has really done an amazing amount for these people that are leaving, that are patriots and deserve every penny of it. And that is the greatest GI Bill that we've ever had, Jared. 80-some thousand dollars in benefits for school, housing, and books. That is a tremendous benefit. So we're saying it's okay to do a 401k, but don't do it at expense of what you need to attract people to stay that are willing to do more than one tour or two tours, but to do 20 years or 30 years. We've got to still have a pull, and we think they're taking too much money away from those we need to pull to 20 and 30 in savings. So I'm okay with the 401k. MOA thinks that's a good idea, as long as we don't do it on the backs of the 17% that we need to be career folks that will be the ones that will be training and maintaining the culture and the readiness of the force.
In our last couple minutes, let's hit on TRICARE at least quickly. I think most folks have heard at this point that the proposal basically is to get rid of TRICARE as we know it, replace it with something similar to the Federal Employee Health Benefits Plan. MOA has certainly not been shy about expressing especially the access problems that the current TRICARE system has right now. What are your concerns about the direction that the commission is heading?
Well, Jared, you had it right, and I think the recommendation by the commission is a welcome shot across the bow, and I said that at the Senate Armed Services Committee Personnel Subcommittee hearing last week. We think at MOA, we think that you're throwing the baby out with the bathwater a little too soon. I'm an optimist. I'm hopeful that DOD could systemically reform the TRICARE system without throwing it out. And by that, I mean we have been advocating for over a decade that DOD needs to fight medical just like they fight wars jointly. And right now, they don't. They're taking baby steps toward it, but there's no transparency in the appointment system, and that's where there's huge savings. They could save 9% of a $50 billion budget if they went to a unified medical command with one pot of money, one person responsible for it, rather than seven or so pots of money. We're not saying get rid of the Surgeon Generals and their Title 10 responsibilities to train, organize, and equip, but let's have an integrated system. Then if that doesn't work, or if DOD comes back over again with the same old story that they're going to keep three different systems, despite all the studies that say that you need to go to a unified system, then we're going to have to really consider the proposal by the commission, because it's not going to get done. Everybody at that hearing agreed with me when I said we're not going to settle for the system it is now. It's done some good things, but it's a system that is not going to work in the future. We're going to have to do it in a more integrated fashion, and we need to revise the contracts to pay for value rather than volume of outcomes.
Mm-hmm. The retort to the three separate services issue is always, well, we now have a Defense Health Agency to at least provide shared services between the three military departments. Are we still in wait-and-see mode on whether or not that...
It's a baby step. It doesn't control the actual appointment system. The test going on here, and Jared, just as an example, in the National Capital Region, there's supposed to be a central office for referrals and appointments. They're supposed to do them all. They're doing 20% because each of the services has their own policies. We're wasting millions of dollars because the military treatment facilities are 25% more efficient, yet they're 27% underutilized. What corporation would have their best factory 27% underutilized when it's the most efficient by 25%? So that is just a small example of what we could do with a unified medical system. But if the bureaucracy in the Pentagon, and we're hopeful that this new Secretary of Defense will take this issue on, it's an acquisition issue, it's a reform issue, we're going to be very vocal about it. We think the system can be systemically reformed and continue to provide a very good uniform benefit to our military families and those that are retired, including 2 million retirees, of which about 73% are enlisted non-commissioned officers. And we've got to pay attention to not charging them four times as much as that's what the commission wants to do, is pay for this on the backs of our retirees.